If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Perfect fits. And that's the late Gene Wilder and the late Peter Boyle from Young Frankenstein. Colin, I thought we would open the showbiz show today with that because we lost Gene Wilder just a few days ago. A man who was in arguably three of the greatest movie comedies of all time. The Producers, Blazing Saddles, and Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
And by the way, here's the amazing thing about the latter two, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein. Mel Brooks made them in the same year.
Yes, 1974.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah. Yep. I think aside from Francis Ford Coppola doing Godfather 1 and The Conversation, both of which Academy Award nominees for Best Picture, I don't think any other movie person has made two great movies like that in the same year.
No, it'd be tough.
I mean, you have to go back to like Charlie Chaplin or, you know, the days when they were making eight movies a year because it took, you know, 2 months to make a movie and they would just put it right out.
But just
remarkable. I wanted to play a little bit of that because they are going to do a kind of a Gene Wilder double feature this weekend at the AMC theaters across the country. 55 theaters across the country are going to be doing this double feature, including here in St. Louis, the AMC West Olive 16, which is one of their dine-in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday and Sunday, they're going to show Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, in which Gene Wilder, of course, plays Willy Wonka. Brilliant performance. That's going to be at 5 o'clock, and then they're showing Blazing Saddles at 7:30.
Wow.
Admission is $5. If you've not seen these movies or you've not seen them in a long time or you have kids, you can take them to see the Willy Wonka movie and then get out of there before Blazing Saddles starts.
Yes.
Probably have to be of a certain teenage. Although I was probably only about 14 years old when I first saw, maybe 15, when Blazing Saddles came out. And still think it's one of the funniest movies ever. But they're going to do that this weekend, and I mention it because neither one of those movies is now streaming on Netflix or on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I think you can pay to watch them online, on demand. AMC did this after Prince died. They put Purple Rain into a bunch of their theaters across the country, and a lot of people showed up. Interesting to see if people show up for the Gene Wilder double bill this weekend. Speaking of Willy Wonka, when he died, his family, Gene Wilder's family, put out a statement talking about their indescribable sadness and all the rest, and about how he had Alzheimer's disease and had really lived with it for the last 3 years as his brain deteriorated. But they said the decision to wait until now to disclose his condition wasn't vanity, but more so that the countless young children that would smile or call out to him, "Hey, there's Willy Wonka," wouldn't have to then be exposed to an adult referencing some illness or trouble and causing delight to travel to worry and disappointment or confusion in these kids. He said, the family said, Gene simply couldn't bear the idea of one less smile in the world.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It was very, I believe it was his nephew or something?
Yes.
Yeah. It was written by his nephew. It was very moving.
Very moving. There are a couple of other Gene Wilder performances that I just want to mention here. His first role was in Bonnie and Clyde, a movie that we're going to reference again in a couple of minutes because there's something about a modern-day movie I want to mention. But his first performance was in a very small role in Bonnie and Clyde. He played a mortician who he and his girlfriend were kind of kidnapped by the Barrow Gang, Bonnie and Clyde, played by Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, plus Gene Hackman as Buck Barrow, Clyde's brother, and Estelle Parsons as Buck's wife, and Michael J. Pollard. They're all in this car, and they're being chased by the cops, and they pull over this other car, the Barrow Gang does, and kind of carjack it with these two people in there, and they make them sit in the back seat, and they drive away in that big car, and they're having a great time in there, and they're all joking around, and Gene Wilder and this young woman are kind of scared, but they're kind of playing along. And then after about 5 minutes, somebody says to him, "What do you do?" And it turns out he's a mortician. And Faye Dunaway, as Bonnie says, "Get him out of the car." she does not want to be in the car with a mortician.
Do you remember the character's name?
Eugene.
It's a great last name.
No, I don't.
Grizzard.
Eugene Grizzard.
Grizzard.
Yeah. So that was his very first movie role. And then, of course, he went on to do The Producers and then later Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, as I mentioned. He also did a bunch of other movies that he wrote and directed, like The Adventure of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother.
Yes.
He did The World's Greatest Lover, which was a parody of Rudolph Valentino and those kind of movies. He did three movies with his bride of 5 years, Gilda Radner, who, of course, was best known for Saturday Night Live.
Haunted Honeymoon.
Yeah, that was one of them. He also did a movie with Harrison Ford that not enough people have seen, called The Frisco Kid. Have you ever seen this one?
Yeah, he plays Avram, something like that.
Yeah, Avram.
Avram.
A Polish rabbi who is sent to America to oversee a Jewish community in San Francisco. He's completely inept, which is why they sent him to do this. And when he comes to America from Poland, of course, there were no planes in those days. So he comes to New York on a boat, and now he has to get from New York to San Francisco. And it's basically his adventures going across the country. Halfway across, he meets up with Harrison Ford as a bank-robbing cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them become this on-screen comedy team that, when they're on their horses riding around and talking, or when they're around the campfire in the evening, they're as good as any comedy duo I've ever seen. Harrison Ford proved in that movie that he could do comedy. This is long before Working Girl. And he was really, really good. And, of course, Gene Wilder was just wonderful as this rabbi wannabe. It's called The Frisco Kid. If you haven't seen that, take a look at it. Mm-hmm. And also, if you want to watch an interview with Gene Wilder, he did not do many of them. I was jealous that Carney had a chance to talk to him about 10 years ago. I never had a chance to interview him. But I think his last big interview was about 3 years ago with Robert Osborne, the guy from TCM. And it's on YouTube, and if you go and look for it, if you search for it on YouTube, just put Gene Wilder interview from 2013. He talks about all of these different projects that we've been mentioning, and it really, really wonderful. His last performance was on Will and Grace back in 2003, 2002.
Did you ever see his last movie? That.
No.
With Pryor. They both retired after it. Another You. He plays two characters. He plays he and Pryor team up to steal the identity of a wealthy person, and so he plays George, one of the schemers, and he also plays Abe Fielding, is the guy's name, the rich one.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plays both of these characters.
I never saw that.
He's sort of like his character's a lot like Leo in The Producers, the character where he's not the real troublemaker of the duo, but then he plays the rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Abe, and it's just a miserable, miserable.
I think one of the reasons I didn't go see that is because at that time, Richard Pryor, we already knew, was sick, right?
Yeah. Oh, he looked
awful horrible
in it.
I remember seeing the trailer for it and saying, oh, this is going to be really uncomfortable to watch, because I remember Richard Pryor at the height of his career, mm-hmm. but I also remember him with Gene Wilder, first in Silver Streak and then in Stir Crazy, and then they did another one called See No Evil, Hear No Evil, mm-hmm. which was terrible, and then I never saw this fourth one. What was it called?
It's
Another You.
Another You, yes.
Yeah, no.
Another You.
I like See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
You did?
Yeah.
It wasn't nearly as... Stir Crazy was the best of the four that they did
together.
Oh, I
like Stir Crazy
a lot.
Dan
gave him an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I did.
So, Gene Wilder, dead this week at the age of 83. And one other thing I have for you. In addition to all the movies he did and a couple of TV shows, in the 60s, when he was starting to get his career going, he also did a TV commercial for Alka-Seltzer, in which he played a complaining stomach.
Oh, there you go.
You have to picture this. It's kind of a pencil drawing animation of a man sitting in one chair and his stomach sitting in the other chair. Listen to this.
Did you ever think of me once? Once in my life.
All right. Control yourself. When you say one thing, your stomach says another.
We don't get along. Heaven knows I've tried.
Sure, he's tried. He gave up hot tamales. Now he's on a new kick, pepperoni pizzas. And I was just getting used to hot tamales.
I like pepperoni pizzas.
Do you like heartburn? Well, you're going to get it every time you eat a pepperoni pizza. And that's a problem.
Gentle.
And the way he stuffs himself at his mother's.
You've always hated my mother.
Are you going to start that business all over again?
Get us anywhere. Obviously, you've never tried Alka-Seltzer. Now, you can't expect him to give up the food he loves. Man does not live by bread alone.
Oh, please.
And you, when you eat spicy foods, when you overeat, help your stomach out. Alka-Seltzer has alkalizers which will calm your upset stomach and neutralize excess acidity. It even has a pain reliever for your head.
Now, listen, that's not my department.
You take care of him, he won't bother you.
Well, I'll try, if you will.
That's Gene Wilder. I don't know the name of the other voice actors in there, but that was probably 65, 66, 67, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. It's available on YouTube if you want to find it as well. All right, so now that we're done with our tribute to the late, great Gene Wilder, let's turn our attention to the movies that are opening this weekend. We're not technically in August anymore, but we're still in the August doldrums of movies because it's not until after Labor Day weekend that we're going to start getting into some quality stuff like Sully and The Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
And some other movies that we're looking forward
Blair
to
Blair Witch
fall.
That I'm very much looking forward to.
A whole bunch of movies that are going to be much better come September. Mm-hmm. But here we're finishing up the month of August on this September weekend with two movies. I don't think either of which we're going to recommend to you, but let's find out. You start.
Well, I believe we both saw this one, The Light Between
Oceans. Yes.
If you've read the book, congrats. They now made a movie about it. This movie stars Alicia Vikander, Michael Fassbender, and Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm.
The first two characters, Michael Fassbender plays Tom, correct?
Yep.
And Tom is a World War I veteran who is just weary of the world. He's ready to not
deal with people.
Yeah. And so he decides, you know what? I'm going to go look for a job that will allow me to be away from people. And off the west coast of Australia, he finds said job. He can be a lighthouse keeper. And they say, oh, there's not many people. You might go crazy. And he says, not a problem. And he signs a long-term contract.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after he moves there, he meets his employer's daughter, Isabel, played by Vikander.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, fall madly in love.
Mm-hmm.
And decide to move out to the lighthouse together.
And by the way, there's nobody else out there on the island.
I mean, there's no one.
The only reason he meets her is because he occasionally goes to town to get supplies and to...
To not die.
Right.
I mean, it's to not die. That's why he goes there.
Yeah.
The goal is to not die.
But she falls in love with him, and he falls in love with her at first sight.
Yes.
And then she eventually marries him and moves out to this island in the middle of the ocean, and you know, she's going to be his wife while he's going to take care of the lighthouse.
Exactly. They decide, of course, as you would, to start a family.
Mm-hmm.
But they have difficulty. Until one day. Lucky for them.
Yeah, well, when you say difficulty, she has two miscarriages.
Yes.
Both of which play out on screen.
Yes. This movie leaves very little sort of... what it succeeds at, especially in the first half of it, is... It's a gorgeous movie to look at. It's more of a meditation. I would have been all right had they just sort of stuck with that. It's like, okay, this is kind of a meditation on not truly ever knowing someone and how you react to these things. Because in marriage, we all have these situations we have to react to, but we've got friends and family and work and all these other things. Well, what happens if you stripped away all of that? How mm-hmm. would these two people who, again, never truly know one another interact under this stressful situation?
Mm-hmm.
But then they decide, oh, let's make a different movie. And the movie they make at that point is one day they find a boat, and in that boat is a baby. And of course, we've had trouble.
And a dead man.
Yes, and a dead man. But of course, let's focus on the baby. And she says, we haven't had a baby. I really want a baby. Well, no, this isn't our baby, he says. But I really want a baby. No, she wins. Because if you're married, she wins.
Yeah.
She
convinces him, let's take the baby in as ours.
Yes.
As far as everybody on the mainland is concerned, they knew I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know about the miscarriage. As far as they're concerned, this was the baby I was pregnant with. We don't have to report this to anybody. After all, the man was probably the baby's father, and so he's dead, so who's going to know?
Exactly. And this is where they make the second movie, is years later. Rachel Weisz shows is part of this town and recounts this tale of how she lost her husband and daughter at sea. And Michael Fassbender, Tom, hears this and is like, oh my gosh, this is about the time we found this baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he immediately feels guilty.
And how old is the kid at that point, you think? 4 or 5 years
yeah,
old?
Yeah, old enough to be a kid and in cute, like...
Running around and
yeah. doing kid things.
Yes.
It's not just a lump
not
baby.
A baby.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So it's a kid. And this is where they kind of lost me, is from here on out, because it goes from this, really, I'm just going to say, sort of a meditation on relationships and all of this into this, I'm not going to say thriller, but there are definitely plot twists. There are, it becomes, this is a soap opera. If you're a fan of soap operas, if you really like them, this is right up your alley, because it felt at times, I'm like, this wouldn't happen in reality, but this would happen in a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that happen in the second half of it, it's melodramatic. More than likely, if you talk to people who've read the book or will see this movie before you possibly, you hear Nicholas Sparks tossed around, because I think there are parallels there.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's a tough movie for me, because I feel a lot about this the way I felt about The Revenant in some ways, is that sometimes it's just nicer to look at than it is to actually pay attention to what's happening on screen.
I didn't see The Revenant, but I would have paid $100 if a bear had gotten into the lighthouse and eaten these people.
So you are not as big a fan of it. I didn't detest it. I thought it was...
Here's part of my problem with this movie.
Yes.
There are at least 10 scenes... of someone, either Alicia Vikander or Michael Fassbender, writing or reading a letter.
Well, it's...
That's not good on screen. That probably works fine in a book.
Yes.
But having somebody, when they write a letter, you know, when you and I are having a conversation, we talk at a normal conversational tone.
Mm-hmm.
But when you write a letter, you actually have to write out the words, which takes longer than saying the word. And so the letters on screen sounded like this. My dear, whatever your name is, Jimmy. What was his name? Tom?
Tom.
My dearest Tom. It has been a long while since my last... Get on with it!
Yep.
And that happens 10 times or so in this movie. I don't want to go to the movie to watch people reading and writing letters.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair. There are big drawbacks in this movie. Like, it's very uneven in sort of quality. Although I will say this director has one of the most fun names to say. Derek Cianfrance.
Yes, he's the guy who also made a movie I hated a couple of years ago.
Blue Valentine?
No, The Place Between the Pines.
Yeah.
A movie that's 8 times longer than it needs to be, and boring and... Well, very much like this one. There was no need for this movie to be made in such a confusing way. That movie was confusing. This movie is confusing. And by the way, you know I'm a big fan of Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
She's got a movie coming out in September or October called Denial, mm-hmm. in which she takes on a Holocaust denier who is suing her because she says that he is a liar. And he sued, this is a real true story, he sued her for slander. And she has to go in court and not only defend herself, but also essentially... prove that the Holocaust happened, because that's the way English law works. And I'm really looking forward to that. I've seen a trailer for that. I like her a lot in a lot of movies that we've seen in the past, and I really looked forward to seeing her in this movie. She doesn't appear for an hour,
and
she's third billed in the movie, and she's not on the movie for the first hour.
And she feels sort of shoehorned in.
Yes.
Because they have to give us backstory on everyone so we understand what's been happening. And yeah, so they... Again, it's clunky at times, but it's beautiful to look at overall, which I think goes a long way in a movie. If it's pretty to look at, that will keep me more engaged.
If you Google or YouTube the phrase "lighthouse on ocean," you will find beautiful pictures of lighthouses and wonderful vistas.
Yeah.
You don't need to go see them in this movie, because you're going to get bogged down in a terrible story, a confusing story.
And that's the second half of it, really does that. I liked the first half of this movie more than I disliked it, because I got what they were going for. But in the second half, if you're going to be a thriller or like I'm not going to say a thriller because it's not. But if you're going to be sort of this melodrama, just embrace that. I don't need the first half. But if you're going to do the first half, just ignore the second half. Have it be about them introducing this new character.
I'm not going to spoil it, but how about the flash forward at the end?
That's awful.
Seems like it was tacked on.
Yeah. To give it an... Yeah. I'm not quite certain why they did it that way.
Terrible. Terrible. But just terrible. What are you giving on a scale of 10?
See, I'm less harsh than you. I think this is a completely average movie, if not a little long. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes.
That's way too long.
It is. So I gave it a 5 because, again, it's, in my mind, just average.
Two out of 10.
Woo!
Do not waste your money and your time on The Light Between Oceans.
I gave it 9 out of 10. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't see it.
This isn't like a Gary Marshall thing where it's like, oh, it'll be sort of silly, but I can go see this
on a date.
There's
no silliness in this.
No, but I'm saying it's not really a good date movie. Like, this is...
You would have more fun inviting two of your friends over and asking them to write letters to each other, and you watch that. Because that's what's going to happen in this movie, and... Wow.
Yeah, so...
This makes 4 movies in a row that Alicia Vikander's been in that I can't stand.
You didn't like Ex Machina, though.
I hated
it. Did you see The Danish?
Yes, hated it.
Hated that.
The new Jason Bourne movie, I put up with it because I'm a Jason Bourne fan. She's in it. She doesn't add anything in particular to it. And now this.
Okay.
I thought that she was going to have some sort of career and I'd be able to go, oh, Alicia Vikander's in that movie. I want to see it. 0 for 4.
Really?
As far as I'm concerned. 2 out of 10 on this one. The other movie I'm going to review today, which you're also not going to want to go see.
Okay.
I'll spoil my review right up front. It's called The Ninth Life of Louis Drax.
Great title.
No, that doesn't even sound good.
I know exactly what's happening.
I know it doesn't sound good. And that's the problem. We've talked about movies this year that had the wrong title.
Mm-hmm.
Like Captain Fantastic was the worst one of the year.
Which I saw.
And did you like it?
Excellent. Yeah. Really liked it. I really enjoyed that movie.
Is that still in theaters?
I think it might be floating around, but...
Viggo Mortensen as the father of 6 kids who grow up in the woods, and then they have to come to civilization to deal with some issues. Wonderful. Everybody I've recommended it to is like that. I'm not going to recommend The Ninth Life of Louis Drax to anyone. Here's the story. Louis is a 9-year-old boy. His parents are played by Aaron Paul, Jesse Pinkman from... Breaking Bad, and an actress I've never seen before named Sarah Gadon. The movie essentially starts off with the three of them picnicking near some cliffs. And the 9-year-old boy, Louis, falls off the cliff. Falls what you would think would be considered there are rocks below. He must have fallen to his death. No, he's fallen to his coma.
Okay.
By the time the emergency people get down there, he's still alive, but he's in a coma. The father, Aaron Paul's character, can't be found. So everybody assumes he pushed the kid off there. He must be the killer. There was some trouble between the mother and the father, and he must have just gotten frustrated and thrown the kid off of there. And so he's probably on the run. And so this 9-year-old boy, Louis, who's in this coma, comes under the care of a pediatric neurologist played by Jamie Dornan.
Who, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's Mr. Shades of Grey, 50 Shades of Grey,
yes,
right?
Yes, he's Christian Grey. He's also in the Netflix series The Fall, BBC Netflix series.
Okay.
As a serial killer.
Okay. He's fine in this movie. Everybody, all the actors are fine. It's not the actor's fault that this movie sucks. So the movie contains flashbacks to earlier times when we see Louis not in a coma as he's growing up, and he has lots of accidents. Let's just put it that way. And at one point, he's being treated by a psychologist played by one of my favorite character actors, Oliver Platt.
Okay.
Who's good in everything he's in. Even when he's in a bad movie, he's always good. So you see some of the interaction between the two of them, and you see flashbacks to other things involving the mother and the father. So I thought, oh, my goodness, Aaron Paul's only in this movie for 60 seconds? That's it? No, he's involved in the flashbacks later. And I like him. And again, he's fine. But the director, Alexander Aja, overdoes things so much.
Alexander Aja?
A-J-A.
Wow.
He adds in a weird dream that's ongoing that I suppose we're supposed to think is going on inside Louis's mind, although it's not clear whether it's coma Louis or flashback Louis.
Okay.
It's a dream involving a seaweed monster. I'm going to pause there for just a second so you can say, why would there be a seaweed monster? Because somebody gave this idiot director some special effects money, and he spent it on a seaweed monster. The plot is way too confusing. Barbara Hershey shows up as Louis's grandmother, has virtually nothing to do in the movie except for some exposition later on that semi-explains a couple of things. But when you see this movie, you're not going to care Who threw the kid off there? If the kid fell himself? If the kid jumped? Was it the mother? Was it the father? What happened to the father? What's wrong with the mother? Is something wrong with the mother? What's the story with her relationship with this pediatric neurologist? What's going on there? And then you're going to say, let's get out of here and get some food.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to want to leave the room. This is going to be on my list of the worst movies of the year.
Wow.
I'm giving it a 1 out of 10. It's called The Ninth Life of Louis Drax. Do not go see it. I would recommend you go see The Light Between Oceans before I would recommend you go see The Ninth Life of Louis Drax.
I thought it was going to be about a cat with a cool name.
It sounds like it should be something interesting like that.
It's a cat that fights crime.
When Barbara Hershey visits the kid, does she bring him candy?
No, but there's a road that she takes.
Oh.
Can't remember the name of the road.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm making the Hershey Highway reference.
Oh, man. I gotcha. I gotcha. A road. Okay. I didn't get it. Man, I was...
Wow.
I'm still trying to open the gas door.
Now, I will recommend a movie for you that I went to see this week, which Colin actually reviewed last week or the week before. I went to see Hell or High Water.
What'd you think?
On your recommendation. I liked it.
You didn't like it as much as I did.
No, you loved it. You called it one of the best movies of the year.
Oh, I think Frank saw it, and he really liked it, I think.
Okay, do you remember when you reviewed it, I asked you one important question about this movie? Because it stars Chris Pine and Ben Foster as bank-robbing brothers,
yes.
And that's where the Bonnie and Clyde thing comes back in, because the director of this obviously wants to get a Bonnie and Clyde mentality where we're rooting for the bank robbers.
Yeah.
And Jeff Bridges is in the movie
as
a crusty old Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
Do you remember the question I asked you when you reviewed the movie?
Does Jeff Bridges mumble?
Yes.
I didn't think he did. Because, does he mumble anything?
Because ever since he played Rooster Cogburn in True Grit, the remake of the John Wayne original role, he'd been talking in every movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
He mumbled in, what the heck was that movie with Sandra Bullock and Kiefer Sutherland? It was Sandra Bullock's one of her first movies where Jeff Bridges kidnapped her.
I don't remember. I don't remember the title of that. But he's made a couple of movies since then.
He mumbled into that.
And he mumbled his way through those. And Jeff Bridges has done some fantastic work on screen. I think he's a good... You take his role in Starman, opposite Deborah Winger, magnificent. Magnificent.
Crazy Heart?
Yeah. Well, Crazy Heart was part of the mumbling years. Where that was the one with the Maggie Gyllenhaal.
And didn't he win for that one, though?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But I just don't like mumbly Jeff Bridges, because after a while, this voice right here gets a little bit annoying.
I think it's vanished the movie.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
He has an Indian sidekick, and he keeps making fun of him.
Which I loved.
It was okay. I think Chris Pine, who plays Captain Kirk in the Star Trek movies, proves himself to be a real actor in this movie. And you were right when you said that Ben Foster was the best thing in this.
He's so good.
He's the brother who's got a little prison record and has just gotten out of prison. And so he's the wild brother of the two of them.
I think he's going to get a nomination for this. I really think he's...
For Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah.
I liked it. I didn't love it the way you did. I give it a 7.5 out of 10. I think you gave it an 8.9. A 9 out of 10. It was good to see an interesting movie coming out in August.
Yes.
There are not a lot of those.
And it has been doing so well at the box office. It's now been in the box. This is its fourth weekend coming up. Mm-hmm. It has increased in theater count every week.
Yeah, it was only in like 30 theaters, and now it's up to 700 or 800.
No, it was 30, then 400, now 900 theaters, and it's increasing again this week because it's starting to get buzz, and so they're going to push for it. They're going to start saying, oh, we need to make this an Oscar contender. So you're going to start and see it in more theaters and more ads for it now.
And it's also good to see a kind of Western, because you don't see really good Westerns. We haven't had a lot of them in the last few years. It's nice to see somebody going back and picking that form up and running with it again. So I'm going to recommend Hell or High Water and absolutely tell you, do not go see The Light Between Oceans and The Ninth Life of Louis Drax. What's going to be the big box office winner this weekend?
It's going to be Don't Breathe Again, because it's fun and there's nothing really big coming out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be Suicide Squad's not going to overtake him. So if you haven't seen Don't Breathe, it's a lot of fun. Go see it. It made $26 million last weekend. That's astronomically
for a horror movie with a cheap budget. That's a lot of money.
Yes. Right. For something that Sony was saying might do 14 million, it did 26 million.
We'll take a break and we'll come back. And I want to ask you, now that we're into Labor Day weekend, to run down, if you would, the winners and losers of the summer of 2016 at the movies, okay?
Okay.
It's the Friday edition, the large morning show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This Showbiz Hour is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. All right, so Colin and I have reviewed two movies that are out this weekend, neither of which gets a big recommendation from us. He gave Light Between Oceans 5 out of 10. I gave it a 2. And he didn't see The Ninth Life of Lewis Drax. He's the lucky one. And so are you, because you're not going to go see it either. But I saw it. This is the way I sacrifice the hours of my day for you, the KTRS consumer. The Ninth Life of Lewis Drax, one of the worst movies of the year, 1 out of 10 from me. Now let's talk about some of the other winners and losers of the summer.
Okay. We've got two losers in theaters right now. Ben-Hur looks to be one of the biggest disappointments. In its second weekend, it made a whopping $4 million.
I think that means it made $15 million in 2 weeks, and the budget was $110.
Yes, and then you have to add in, this is a huge write-off for whatever company. This is why they do the creative accounting where, let's say, Paramount makes it. Paramount makes it, but then it's going to go to Paramount subsidiary A, and they're going to send it to subsidiary B of A. And this is why Paramount is going to make $15 million, and no one else is going to see any money.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Okay.
Another movie that is, I know, distressing for you to hear, but War Dogs.
Yeah, I really like that movie.
It's a bomb. I think it might have 2 weeks in theaters.
Oh.
It's at like $27 million after last weekend. So let's say it's closer to like $30 to $33 million right now. It had a budget between $40 and $50 million and probably double that amount in production.
You know, there were two movies that have come out in the last year that were both war-related movies that I enjoyed. One was War Dogs, and the other one was Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Remember that true story?
Yes.
Starring Tina Fey? I think that came out last fall.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Or maybe Sisters came out last fall, and this one came out over the winter. But I really liked Whiskey Tango Foxtrot quite a bit, and I really liked War Dogs. Just goes to show you, I'm not in the mainstream with the movie-going public because nobody else went.
So War Dogs,
I will tell you, the people who I've told to see it, who went to see it, they came back and said, thank you. That was a good recommendation.
War Dogs is by Todd Phillips, the guy who did the Hangover movies, so I think, and Old School. So I think Todd Phillips is going to go back to his days of decapitating giraffes. And if you haven't seen all the Old School movies, Hangover movies,
yeah,
that won't make sense.
Okay.
I think that's what he's going to be stuck doing. The winners. This is a lot more fun to do. The winners are the horror movies from this year. I'm going to go over a few horror movies that had just awesome years. The Purge election year did over $100 million total, international and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or close to $200 million, actually. Sorry.
Which is a lot of people that actually wish that The Purge was real.
So that's great. The Darkness, which did $10 million, but that was on a budget of $4 million. It made money. Don't Breathe, which just opened at $26 million, cost a whopping $9.9 million to make. Lights Out, which I watched a while back, was $4.4 million. That brought in a cool $125 million, so
wow,
that's pretty good. And then The Shallows, which you liked.
Yes.
I think that had a budget of about $8 or $9 million and is up over $60 million.
That's Blake Lively versus a shark.
Yes, one shark.
Yeah.
And a buoy.
Good movie.
One shark and a buoy, which is great. The other big, big loser from this summer, and it's weird to say this, it's a movie that made $542 million, is X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh.
And the reason that's a loser is that had forecasting at the beginning of the summer putting it at about $1 billion. So... yeah, that's kind of rough. A few other big losers from the year. Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. Hopefully, we will see the last of Zac Efron. That only made $100 million, which again sounds like Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Oh.
$295 million worldwide, which sounds, again, like a lot, but that was tracking closer to half a billion. And then Independence Day Resurgence. Killed the plans for a trilogy because it only ended up doing $383 million, which is close to its 1999 domestic take of all of Independence Day, 1999, when movies were like $5.
I don't think there was any reason for a second Independence
Day. Which is essentially a remake.
Yeah, because they killed them, didn't they?
Yeah.
No.
Now, speaking of remakes,
Yes.
How about Ghostbusters? The female version of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's a shame because that movie was, I think that movie was better than people gave it credit for.
Yeah.
It's sort of a mixed bag because it didn't do very well at all in theaters. I think it probably should have done more than it did.
Mm-hmm.
It did like 217 or 218 million worldwide, I want to say, like all told.
Yep.
But it was very, very expensive. So it's not. It's going to have to make money on video on demand, and
I thought it was cool, and I liked it a lot, and I thought that it would get more recognition with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and them kind of showing themselves in the movie and then giving it their blessing.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I thought the women who were in it did a good job, and Paul Feig did a good job.
This is directing it. Last year was a record year for movies. It was the most money ever spent at the box office. This year, it's not going to be. It's a big down year. For Hollywood.
I actually looked at some numbers here. This year, Hollywood is going to make $4.52 billion.
Those poor guys.
But that's on fewer tickets sold than in 4 years.
Yes.
So if you don't raise the ticket prices, you don't make all the money. And that's
IMAX and 3D and all that jazz.
I think you left out one big winner of the summer.
Who's that?
Finding Dory.
Yeah, I guess so, because it was only tracking to do like $700 million and it ended up over $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something worth noting, is that out of the top five movies this year, three of them are sort of kids-ish movies, Zootopia, Jungle Book remake, and Finding Dory.
And one of the surprises of the summer is Suicide Squad, which got blasted by so many people, and it has made
$872 million.
But nobody likes it.
Nope.
That's the weird thing. All right, that's our showbiz stuff for this week. Colin will get to the newsroom and be back with that in just a few minutes. Next hour, we'll have the Harris Challenge, Mike Evans, and Knuckleheads in the News as we continue here on the Big 550 KTRS.